is something, you know, that I will be pushing with respect to the priorities of Chicago State. So we do have a coordinated and orchestrated effort, like other universities. In fact, it's a lobby day for all of the universities, so it just won't be Chicago State.
Thank you. Thank you.
Oh, sure.
Thank you very much. I think we'll move ahead with the update on enrollment and retention. Is Mr. Bell here? No? Okay. Then let's go ahead with the, Dr. Westbrooks, do you want to come and present the tenure and Dean Emeritus? Trustee Finney? We could.
Well, we don't have closed session in terms of the committees. We just basically recommend the tenure onto the full board. But you do have the emeritus.
He can't vote on the tenure recommendations, so we have to have the.
I'm gonna be here.
Again, good morning, trustees.
Good morning.
There are two recommendations for tenure. One being Dr. Agata. Currently, he is serving in the capacity as director for the Library Information Media Studies Program. Dr. Agata, he came to us with tenure, and he has requested that tenure be retained. As you know, tenure is not something that we just give away. We take it very seriously. With him in particular, the department reviewed his credentials. He has a tremendous amount of research that he has engaged in, pages of publications, and he meets all of the requirements and criteria for tenure. The second candidate is Sarah Austin. She's in occupational therapy. She, like Dr. Adaka, has met all of the criteria for tenure, and that's not only in teaching, but that's research and service as well. As a matter of fact, Dr. Austin, she was up for tenure last year. However, due to illness, she was not able to submit her portfolio. And in fairness to her, the portfolio was reviewed and all of the contents accepted. So those are the two individuals that we are recommending for tenure.
Any questions?
No questions.
If not, I would entertain a motion to approve Dr. Austin and Dr. Agada for tenure.
So moved.
Second?
Second.
Yep. Trustee James, you cannot vote.
I'm sorry, I can't vote.
This is tenure.
You can't vote on this one, so.
Trustee Scott.
I would second the motion.
Trustee Hill?
Yes.
Trustee Finney?
Yes.
Trustee Scott?
Yes.
Okay, the next item is Dean Emeritus. As you know, David Slacken, he retired in December. Formerly, he was dean for the College of Pharmacy, and it was through his all of his hard work that the College of Pharmacy or the pharmacy program was approved. It is through his connections with the various enterprises, including Walgreens, CVS, and others. That have provided the financial support to help us get that program off the ground and running. And in recognition of all of his hard work, it was recommended. Dr. Watson accepted that recommendation, and so did I, from all of the colleagues across campus, that he bestowed the honor with the recognition of Dean Emeritus. So I'm hoping that the board will approve that.
I move the matter. The dean has served us well.
Is there a second?
I second.
Trustee Hill?
Yes.
Trustee Finney?
Yes.
Trustee Scott?
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
The other item on our agenda, Dr. Wesson, is the enrollment, update on enrollment and retention. But I think the person who was supposed to give us the update is not here.
Who's that?
Does anyone else available to deliver that report?
I don't remember the numbers off the top of my head. What I can tell you, enrollment is up overall by 19%.
And that is why we're so hesitant, because the numbers are so high that it made us
pause
and question ourselves. So we are scrubbing the numbers. We know we are significantly up. As you fall semester, we led the state in terms of percentage increase.
By 6.1%.
When we saw the numbers most recent, you know, we said, take these back, rescrub them. But we are significantly up.
And again, the number that I just gave you, that's being compared to where we were last year's spring term. So this is just a comparison with spring of last year. Mm-hmm. Okay? This is not the comparison of where we were for fall term. In addition, for FTEs, we're up by 10%?
Yeah, close to 10%.
I think it was 10%. I've tried to memorize the numbers. But we are really excited about it. But the one thing we can definitively say, that our retention regarding our first-time, full-time freshmen, that number is up in terms of retention, 83%, and that's from fall to spring.
So that's the percentage of students who
return. Yes.
We've never had that type of an increase or retention of our students. And yeah, I have to give a lot of credit to our faculty. Our mm-hmm. faculty stepped up, you know, and they stepped on a volunteer basis to work with the concept called the early alert system. The concept was put in place in the fall, and the faculty made it happen. Dr. Green, and with her efforts, and I have to give credit to the five deans. The five deans put in just innumerable hours, you know, of just them personally, their staff, making phone calls, reaching out to students. All of that resulted in the highest retention of first-time, full-time freshmen from fall to spring that we've ever seen, which also then led to this unusual enrollment increase that we have. Mm-hmm. Now let me say, there are some things that we're looking at that we are concerned about, some of the students that we have retained, and Dr. Green and her staff are working on those students. We have some students who have some academic challenges. We must address that. That is our responsibility. But the thing is that we're looking pretty strong. We're looking pretty strong in terms of enrollment right now.
And we have put some things in place. We've hired more tutors. Not only will that, the tutors that have been hired are at students who are really excelling in many of those classes where students are finding that they have some challenges. So we've had an increase in the number of tutors that we've hired, but also it brings the additional income for students who may have some unmet needs. So I think that initiative, having the extended hours in the library, having the specific textbooks where students were not able to afford those, we've placed those on reserve in the library. So I think it's those types of initiatives. The president has an emergency fund whereby students can make application, and there's a review body that will look at each request that comes through. So I think it's really a compilation of things that we're doing that will assist us as we move forward with the retention and graduation rates of our students.
You know, it's very interesting. We lose students over $125. Mm-hmm. I mean, they drop out of school, and to us, we might say, well, you know, $125, that is major. And the student will not have money to come to school to take the bus. The student will not have money to meet what we consider a small obligation, but to them, it is their world, and they drop out. We were blessed in October to have gotten about a $25,000 donation and a $10,000 or $15,000 donation from some individuals. And they said, "Doc, you know, this is for you to use as you feel is appropriate." And what we did was we took those dollars and made them solely available to only one thing, scholarships. And those $200 and $500 scholarships, without a doubt, has helped significantly retain students who we normally would have gotten, no, who we would have lost. And it's just, you know, it's just a different kind of reality that we must become sensitive to. Our students, we lose them for $125.
Dean, thank you very much for this report. You know, it seems to me that when we look at the way the school is operating now, in prior years and compare it to prior years, something has changed. For some undocumented reason, maybe, our, in comparison to other universities and colleges, our enrollment is up, mm-hmm. and we're leading the state. For some undocumented reason, our retention is up, and we're leading the state there. I've been on this board now for 5 years, and I have yet to witness the kind of turnaround in performance that we've experienced this last 12 months. And I'm just curious as to where you as the provost would sort of summarize what's happened here. We were viewed as a loser school, and now we're not. What happened?
Well, Dr. Finney, I think, number one, it's been a collective effort. I think that there are so many individuals on this campus. I mean, we love this institution.
And yeah, but you loved the institution before. What happened?
Well, I think that more of a concerted effort has been made that's been more focused. It's not that we didn't know what to do. It's being able to do it, follow through, have some safety nets in place. But also, I think it's about accountability. Because with that accountability, a lot of people that used to be here are no longer here. So I think that all of those have been contributing factors as the university moves forward. But it's not without hard work, because it's not something that you put in place. You then have to do your follow-ups, your follow-up meetings, or your debriefings. You always talk about what went well. But at the end of the day, you want to know, but how can we improve upon whatever we've just accomplished? Because we can't settle for walking away feeling good about what we've accomplished. It must then, we raise the bar even higher and saying, well, how can we even improve what we've improved?
So well, let me ask you another question, attitude. Because it seems as though I'm not getting an answer. I'm getting an explanation. But
okay.
Why wasn't this present before?
I think I can help you.
Okay,
help
thank you.
Well, no, I'd like for her to answer the question, because I'm not asking you, Trustee.
I was asking there.
Yeah, I'm asking this provost.
Well, a lot has to do with the leadership, Dr. Finney, and I know that it, you know, it depends on, and a lot of it has to do with the focus on at a point in time, what's priority for the institution. And I think that when the priority must drive everything we do at the institution. We can't just say that enrollment, retention, and graduation is a priority if you don't have the strategies behind it and the accountability behind it. And I think that that's the major difference.
So then, I guess you would say that there's been maybe a change in management?
Oh, definitely.
The reason I'm raising this is because this board went through a very, very difficult process. During that process, the board was roundly criticized that it was taking this school backwards. Students got on the floor and represented that the baccalaureate and the master's level and the doctorate level degrees were going to be not of value, that the institution was going to go down the drain. Faculty members charged that the process was not one that was helpful, although we were able to document that the process had complied with the full extent of the law. And we've had now a period of time when you essentially served as the chief executive officer of this school, and now we have a period where Dr. Watson has served as the chief executive officer of the school to oversee the day-to-day operation. I would submit to you that perhaps it was the freedom that this board allowed invested in you to do your job during the period of time from July 1 through October to September, and then having, I think, used its best judgment in selecting Dr. Watson to be its president, and now having him fully empowered and capable of doing his job, or doing the job of leading the institution. I suspect that, in my judgment, as I now bring to a close of my fifth year on this board, I suspect that that's been a major reason for why we're experiencing a turnaround in terms of the performance of the school. And I mention it at this particular point because I want the students that are here this morning to appreciate the fact that in a place like this, it is possible to have a moment of disagreement as to the direction of the school and yet achieve, I think, a positive purpose. We, after all, are a democratic society, and this board is vested with the authority and responsibility of making sure that it has top quality management, and then let the management take place. I've not been on this campus now for almost 3 months. It's wonderful not to have to be on this campus and worry about the day-to-day operations of the school, because we have a team here that Dr. Watson is the head of, and you are the chief operating officer of, that's able to work and get the job done. And so for me, and on my narrow little point of view, I think that it represents a wisdom on the part of this board, investing in you the authority to carry forth the job as provost, and wisdom as it engaged in a process of selecting a new president. And so I don't want to take any credit. All I think we have to do as policymakers is be careful to select those people that we believe are able to do the job, and let them do the job. And now I feel somewhat vindicated that the decision that I precipitated in was the right decision. We're moving forward.
Might I add to that, just simply put, you cannot flatly attribute the successes that have happened over this period purely to the hirings that have gone on. There would have been no president who could have come into this university after what transpired last year without a commitment to understanding the needs of the student population and hearing and addressing their concerns. it is directly because of that commitment to hear and address the concerns of the students on this campus that we are seeing the turnaround. And if we want to attribute, you know, congratulations and accolades to individuals, let's contribute it to the students from Student Government Association, the students from SWAT, the students from SAC, the everyday student who took a personal interest in their education and the individuals administering that area and came in and sat through meeting after meeting after meeting trying to work through these issues to make sure that those things that prohibited the university from being able to retain and enroll students didn't continue. And along with that, the members of the staff here who definitely were there and helped with giving us the expertise and the knowledge that they possess to help coordinate that effort. If it wasn't for the staffing as well as the students, we would not have the successes that we have today.
Well, I don't disagree with you in terms of the involvement of the students. What the key thing was, and I want to represent here, is we had a change in leadership that, in my judgment, was a good thing. And I wanted to point out that Dr. Westbrook was material in that, and she had an open ear, which simply says that perhaps the previous administration didn't have an open ear and didn't permit the students to exercise their engagement and involvement. And so we have what we have, and I want to not just close this this moment to say that you are to be commended, Dr. Westbrook.
Thank you, Dr.
And Dr. Watson is too. And I call for the orders of the day.
Thank you.
One other question. The report requested, I know you don't have it in front of you, so you're at a disadvantage. There was a request in the report for the appointment of a marketing and communications person to support the enrollment effort. Do you know whether any efforts have been made to move that forward? Have any candidates been identified for that role?
Dr. Watson?
No candidates have been identified for that role at this point. What we've done is we put out a RFP, and what we will be bringing before the board today is recommending a company who can handle that. And then at that point, we're also going to move. We will start the process of trying to identify someone. We were trying to do it on a parallel track. To identify someone. Actually, we put out we advertised the job, I think back in October, November, or something like that. We interviewed a number of individuals and just didn't come up with anybody solid. We then put out an RFP. We've had a committee review that. That's going to be brought to the board, and we're going to now give it another shot at trying to identify someone.
Right, we might have been in a marketplace, a different marketplace now.
Yes, ma'am.
There's people needing jobs and people who are really could meet our needs. My next question relates to the spring enrollment, the enrollment numbers.
Yes.
Do we have any numbers on?
Yes, we have the numbers, but the numbers remain unofficial until those numbers have. I mean, until they become official. But we do have copies, and before. Within the next hour, maybe I could just give you a copy of what we have in terms of the comparison of last year, same time, to now.
I'm talking about applications for enrollment in the fall. Do you have any
we have the funnel information.
Do we
funnel
have any
information?
Yeah.
Do we have the number of applications thus far?
For fall. I know Romy said that we had about 2,000 applications for this coming fall from the Chicago Public Schools. Now the question is that up compared to last year? What the quality of those students are? That, we need to disaggregate that and take a look at it. I know that we have we've met with a number of faculty, a number of staff members who are trying to put forth a major effort with Chicago Public Schools to try to recruit more students this time. And once again, you know, Dr. Green, Leticia, and a number of staff members and faculty members have really put forth a yeoman's effort in trying to turn around our recruitment effort. You may notice that we have, I don't think there's going to be any place in this board meeting that it's going to be stated, but we have a number of billboards up throughout the city. And you see people nodding their heads.
Is everything up on the campus?
If you can see it from campus, from the dormitories.
If, we have some up on campus, but as you drive down
I-57.
95th and Stony.
I-57 and right the Bishop Fourth, from the Cougar Drive on campus, they're the huge billboard that you can see, Chicago State. And I think we have about 6 billboards up throughout the south side of Chicago. I was driving down and I saw in back of a bus.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I was getting ready to say, I saw it on the bus.
We're on buses now. The dean brought in a Time magazine, drew a Time magazine on the desk and said, what are we doing? We have a full page ad inside Time magazine. So, I got to give credit to the staff. The staff and the faculty, because the faculty responded on this one here. We needed some pictures. They really, really responded. And we were able to get some good pictures, get some good involvement in terms of actually selecting which ads we were going to go with. So even though we did not have a company, even though we did not have a public relations person, Felicia and her crew stepped up. And they stepped up and they really, really did a credible job that put us out in the community. And I've heard a lot of faculty, Lori, you made a comment, about, the fact that you had seen one of the billboards or something.
Oh, yeah.
So this has been out there. And, the faculty and the staff, they have really, really done an excellent job in helping us get our name out there.
I think the next question
here are the numbers.
Is
thank you. Can't see them.
I was going to say that.
In addition, we did have, there were approximately 600 applications that had not been reviewed that may be eligible for admission. And as a result, it's my understanding that there was a part-timer who was hired to assist you, an extra help person to assist you with that. So of that 600 additional applications that we're currently reviewing, I'm sure that it will have a tremendous impact. But regarding the current head count for the total of new students, we're up by 846 students. And for the FTEs, 5,019 students. So when we look at the unduplicated total, we're talking about 7,053 students compared to last year, same time, we're up 665 students.
Mm. That's great.
You don't have the information on the applications then?
The only thing I can tell you, Addie, the applications come to you. What do the applications look like, the number of applications that are coming in?
The last report that I saw, because we ran a report Friday, it was close to 2,000.
Yeah.
But we're still processing because we have a number of applications that we received from the Chicago Public Schools. Mm-hmm. So our target is to finish putting all of those in by the end of the week, and then we'll be able to give you a more definitive answer comparison to last year.
And when you talk about enrollment, we cannot think that enrollment is made up of just bringing new students in. A very key part of enrollment is retaining the existing students. Because if we're losing them out the back door as fast as we're bringing them in, our enrollment would never go up. If anything, it might go down. And once again, with what Dr. Green has been doing, with what our faculty has been doing, with what our deans have been doing, they have, put together a concept this fall that has really, really retained the students. And I want to give, a lot of credit deserves right there. And And I have to say, we met with students, we met with SWAT, we met with SGA numerous times. And they would give us concepts of what would help us to retain students. You put all of that together, and that is why we have the enrollment increase that we have now. It's not just bringing in new students, it's the fact that we were able to retain students from fall to spring. And, you know, those student organizations, the faculty, they all played a very key role in doing that.
I know, it's great. I just want to, and I think you've done a great job of doing that and then of conveying what the impact has actually been in terms of retention. I don't see, we don't have the data in front of us on the applications, which is once, you know, there's applying and then there's getting in, and then, and I think, given that that's one of the board's top priorities, that we would like to make sure that we have that information and a person who is knowledgeable about it to report it at our meetings. So if you could make sure that yes, happens the next time, we would sure appreciate it.
It will be ready the next time. And let me say that you don't even have to wait till the next time. We will make a request that we pull something together within the next couple of weeks and send that out, you know.
That would be good. We would appreciate that. Okay.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Okay. The last item on our agenda is public and employee comments. Are there any public and employee comments today? Please come to the microphone and tell us who you are. And
hi, my name is Sarah, and I'm a student here.
Can you say your name again?
Sarah.
Last Hayden. Name?
H-A-Y-D-N, Hayden. I had a question, I suppose, about the new enrollment, about the increase in over 600 students. I'm wondering if there's any, even, I know that you don't have numbers, but even a roundabout prediction as to how many students were admitted due to the lowering of the ACT scores and GPAs for admission. Is there a roundabout synopsis of that?
Oh, I think you can answer. If there's an answer, let's give it.
Well, first of all, I'd like to clear up some misinformation that continues to surface across this campus. And it's the lowering of ACTs. Because I think that sometimes when information is imparted, it is either incomplete and or inaccurate. Last year, we spent an entire year looking at our students and those students who are successful in terms of graduation. Specifically, we spent an inordinate amount of time looking at the University College. With that, we had faculty who are statisticians to look at the various models that exist, not only at Chicago State, but at other institutions. We had faculty who serve on the Academic Standards Committee, which is an arm of the Faculty Senate, to prepare such a model. That model was then shared with institutional research. So there was clearly collaboration. What we found through the research of both of those bodies, that indeed there is a correlation, a much higher correlation, with student success and GPA, not with ACT. So as a result, those entities created a model that would allow this institution to use a sliding scale, whereby, because what we found, we were turning away students who had ACTs of 23 because they had GPAs of 2.0. We knew that when we embarked upon this,
that the ACT was 18 with a 2.75 GPA. And students who did not fit within both parameters, it had to be both, they were denied admission to this institution. So what the research did, the researchers, including the faculty, they came up with a model whereby we would use a sliding scale. And what that sliding scale allowed us to do is to look at those students who had high ACTs, who maybe had lower GPAs, none less than 2.0, and those students who had high GPAs, but maybe didn't do so well on the ACT. No student at this institution was enrolled with less than a 2.0 that I am aware of, because I made no exceptions. Further, no student was admitted with an ACT of less than 16. We know already that the research says that the GPA and high school rank, both criteria, are better predictors of the success of students. And it didn't say minority students, students as a whole. So that is the accurate information. It is not that we allow students to enter this institution, that we lowered the standards. No, what we did is we were supposed to use a sliding scale to look at both parameters, not only disallow a student to enter because of an ACT, but to take into account that we had some very good students who were in honors programs with very high GPAs that we were turning away.
Is it possible to make that information available to everyone? Because that there is a legitimate concern about that, and now that you've clarified exactly what's going on with that situation, it's very, very important that that information now gets out to everyone, so that no one has that misconception about this process. And along with that, I've seen the success of the University College program for students who have been enrolled in that area. Along with that, the particular measure of actually looking at not only just the ACT, but also looking at what the student has done over a body of work in high school is something similar to what the Honors College does with their admissions, where students don't necessarily have to have a 23 in order to on the ACT in order to be accepted into that program, if they've shown that they can do adequate work, you know, through coursework. So,
but also to clarify something else, the University College, because I think there's a misperception about that as well. The University College, and faculty, but we have some stellar students in our University College. The students that are in University College, they remain there for 1 year. And there's this, again, it's like these students are staying there and they graduate from the University College. No, they do not. Just like the Honors Program is comprised of students across all university colleges. The University College, guess what? It has education majors, business majors, health science majors, nursing majors. It includes every population that you can think of. These are the same students, once they've completed 1 year of intensive support within the University College, then they assume the curriculum within their respective colleges. So they're just there for 1 year.
Thank you very much. The model that Dr. Westbrooks described was, in fact, presented to the board, and I'm sure that it's, you know, easily available. It's very understandable. It's very straightforward, and there's nothing about it that would lead you to believe that we have reduced our standards whatsoever. The standards were very well presented in terms of the prediction ability of people who met those criteria to be able to be successful at the university.
Sarah, was that satisfactory to you?
Sorry?
Was that satisfactory to you, that explanation?
That's actually nowhere near what I was asking. I was asking whether or not the 600 students increased by 600, if there's a number that's representative of how many have come in due to the, pardon me, sliding scale that has been administered. I want to know any number for that. I didn't want an explanation of the scale, I just wanted a number.
Is it possible to review the data and then, you know, it's a simple program on Excel and give it?
Some of the information, the increase is attributed to undergraduate. The other increase came from the pharmacy. 90 students came from pharmacy. Another number came from the graduate program. So when we talk about increases, we're not necessarily talking about increases just from undergraduate.
I'm talking about the next fall. The additional 600 that you mentioned right before you left, the additional 600 who are to be enrolled next fall?
No. The 600 that I talked about today are the 600 that are currently here for spring term.
Okay, so there are no fall 2010 numbers?
No.
No, not yet.
Not yet. Okay. And the increase that I'm referring to for this year, these are all undergraduate students. Mm-hmm. We did not have any, and correct me if I'm wrong, do we have any additional admits for University College for spring?
A few.
How many, approximately?
Yeah. Seven.
Seven,
eight.
Because, yeah. I believe in giving out information. Hold on. For two sides, there's a 10 and a 2.
The 665 additional students that were admitted are comprised of the 34 of them are undergraduate conditional, so those would be your university college students. All of the rest are regular admits, including graduate students, as well as we have the transfer students is the largest number. We have 345 undergraduate students that were transfer students. So that made up the largest percentage of those students. You know, I can go down the list. 47 were freshmen, less than the age of 23. We have, these are regular admits. Freshmen that were older than 22, we had 28. As indicated, the undergraduate conditionals were 34. Transfer freshmen, 25. Regular transfers, 345. Non-degree seeking, 16, because some students come in undecided. Mm-hmm. Second bachelor's, we have 52 students that re-enrolled to get a second bachelor's. That accounts for 547 total undergrads. In addition, we had 299 students. For the graduate full admits, we had 74. The graduate conditional admits, they're just waiting for their applications to be processed. We had 5. 95 certification students and 125 non-degree seeking students. So the numbers are self-explanatory, but I wanted to make clear so that when individuals leave this room, they understand that the 665 students that were enrolled, that only 34 of them are University College students, whereby we use the sliding scale.
And presumably some of the other increase in enrollment is due to improved retention.
Yes.
So, you know, it would be helpful.
Oh, these are all new students.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, it would be helpful to for the board to understand as enrollment increases what programs are being effective in delivering them. So a little more breakdown on that would be helpful. Okay, any other public and employee comments?
I move we go into executive session.
Wait, no, wait,
there's a committee meeting.
We don't, do we need, can we, do we need executive session?
No.
Okay. Then I will enter, are you going to make a comment?
Yes.
Okay, we've got about 2 more minutes, and then we need to adjourn soon, so.
How you doing? My name is Lene Hill. I wanted to ask a question because it seemed like don't nobody know what's going on when a student asked a question about the numbers and about the interviewing, the applications. Is it a possibility, a way that they can have more students that probably have potentials, just like the other staff that can help them with the applications and stuff, or other needs or areas that they need help in?
Oh, sorry, could you ask that again?
Yeah. The students. It's a lot of students here that have a lot of potentials, just like the faculty or the staff do. How come, I mean, is it a way that they can have students that's had a potential to help in areas that need help in? Not like work study, but more than work study.
Like internships?
Yes.
Yeah, actually, that's already going on. You're going to hear about it in the later meeting if you choose to stay for that. But I don't want to rain on somebody's parade. I guess Mr. Meese can present a little bit about it if he chooses to. But there's about to be another 40 jobs created for students to help address that need through the Convocation Center.
All right. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Okay, great.
Ma'am, so that I understand you, what you're saying is you're looking for peer service assistance. Is that basically it?
Yes, I'm saying that it's a lot of students that have potential too that have degrees and stuff that in the university that don't have jobs, and y'all have areas where y'all need stuff like the admission area.
Okay.
They have been done on the application, so.
Okay, there are a couple of things. One, certain data with regards to students, we have to students cannot have access to certain data that with regards to other students. Okay, that's one thing. That those are federal laws. Second is that if you look at a number of our areas, we do utilize students quite a bit. And a number of students are employed throughout financial aid, admissions, registrar's office, and et cetera. Could we employ more? It's something we can always look at. Okay? That is something that we are looking at going forward as we look at some restructuring, you might say.
Great. Thank you very much. May I have a motion to adjourn?
So move.
There a second?
A second.
Trustee Hill?
Yes.
Trustee Finney?
Yes.
Trustee James?
Yes.
Trustee Scott?
Yes.
Thank you all.